And first of all, I do want to point out that at least 90% of the time this year, at least, maybe even more, I did stick to the Haftorahs as the topic. I never anticipated that I would really teach what I agreed to teach to. So I just want to point out that. And second thing is I worked very hard, but that's because I never saw the Haftorahs before. So this week's Haftorah begins. Vayishlach Yehoshua bin Nun, min hashitim, shnayim anashim, miraglim cheresh lemor. L'chu ru'u et ha'aretz ve'et yiricho, v'yelchu v'yavo beit isha zona, u'shma rachav, v'yishkavu shama. And Yehoshua bin Nun, from a place called Shittim, sent two men to spy secretly, saying, go see the land and Yericho. They went. They came to a woman who was a harlot's home, and her name was Rachav, and they lodged there.
I'm sorry, is this the Haftorah? Yes. Okay. I never look at the Haftorah.
You also go out and make Kiddush or not? I think it's a wonderful minhag. Okay. You can understand somewhat of a thematic. So you can appreciate some kind of a thematic connection between this idea of sending spies and between Parshat Shlach, where Moshe sends the spies. Now, there are a couple of obvious problems, and certainly people who have been stuck in this class for the last number of years are aware of. For example, there's one important word in this verse which is remarkably missing from the parsha, and what is that? Meraglim. It never does call the meraglim in Parshat Shlach, and as we've said many times in the name of Rabbi Soloveitchik, he said that was part of the sin. The sin was that they were spies, but Moshe never sent them to be spies. It was chet ha-meraglim, it's the sin of the meraglim, but the word meraglim does not appear at this week's parish at all. The word meraglim does appear later on in Sefer Dvarim, in a retrospective of trying to say all the things that had gone wrong, and there it says that they had spied the land, but they were never asked to spy the land. Over here, it goes straight off without any question. It calls them meraglim. It actually calls them meraglim cheresh, right? Secret spies, undercover spies, 007. Here we have, without any question whatsoever, spies. Now, there would be a question that would immediately emerge, and that is that when Moshe sent them and they ended up being spies, it didn't work out all that well. So that being the case, why would Yehoshua, when he takes over, go and send spies? Now, if I want to be overly mathematical, which is probably a very bad thing to do, I can say, well, it didn't work out because 10 out of the 12 didn't work out, 2 out of the 12 worked out. So Yeshua said, okay, so obviously 2 work out, so therefore he sent 2. And none of you like that answer. Excuse me? You're back on that.
Well, there's a Torah to Aretz, no? La Torah to Aretz, which is different from going to Et Aretz Ve'et Yericho, because it looks like, you know, the first point of entry that they're going to have to take over.
Right. So let me just go back for a second. Why does Moshe send them? We don't want to talk about this week. But very, very quickly, what Rabbi Soloveitchik suggested was that Moshe's all questions that he asked, is it good land or bad, were all rhetorical questions. And Moshe was something like the shadchan who's trying to set you up with somebody, and they say, no, how did it go? But he went even further with that, and I'll just give you the analogy which we've used in the past. If somebody does go on a date, or goes on a blind date, or I guess if you go on a shidduch date, that is a blind date, then the reason you go on the date is in order to try to evaluate if this is a good idea, if it's not a good idea, if this is going to work or it's not going to work. So you go with a very critical approach. On the other hand, what if God comes over to you and tells you that I'm willing to introduce you to the person that when I created your soul thousands of years ago, this is the other part of your soul, and I want to reintroduce you to your soulmate. So that, do you go on such a date? And if the answer is yes, for what purpose? Do you go with a critical approach to see if God got it right? Or do you say, okay, this is it? Which means part of the big problem of dating and such things is that a person isn't really sure. And I've also, you know what? We'll discuss in halacha the idea of bashert. That's a very good topic. The idea of bashert. It's one of the most destructive concepts in Judaism. Yeah, well, you think that there's somebody perfect there for you. And then the second mistake you make is that you think that you're perfect. So if you're perfect, then he must be perfect, so then you keep waiting for somebody perfect, without realizing that you're imperfect, so therefore the perfect mate for you is going to be quite imperfect as well, and therefore when you find this imperfect person, you don't realize that that's your beshet. Anyway, let's go on. So therefore, if God says this to you, so then you just go for what purpose? Not to be critical, you just go to begin the rest of your life. When Moshe sends the Meraglim, or when he sends the men, they're called Anashim, when he sends them to see the land, for what purpose does he send them? Well, he sends them, and again, if you have any kind of historical sensitivity, then you know that there was a thing called the Brit Bein Abtarim. You know that on numerous occasions, God did sort of mention offhandedly to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that this is the land that you're meant to be in, and so on, which means, why are they going there? Is this an advanced scouting mission from Herzl to see if it's better to go to Uganda or better to go to Israel? I mean, this sounds like a complete absurdity, which means that the critical approach that they take is one of evaluation, one of spies, and so on. Okay, let's leave all that. So after the abysmal failure of sending the spies, we find Yehoshua, who is actually one of the spies, sending two spies. Who these two spies are, the Torah doesn't tell us. What does Yeshua tell them? To go spy, go secretly, go undercover. What does he do? Tell them to spy the land, to see the land. Which place specifically does he tell them? Yericho. Presumably, you're absolutely correct, that Yericho is going to be the entrance that they will take into Eretz Yisrael, so therefore, as their first step into Israel, they need to see exactly how to proceed. They come to a home of a woman who is a zonah, and if you want to, I'm sure you could give all kinds of interpretations to reinterpret what the word zonah would be in this particular context, but it sounds very much that the English translation here is actually quite correct. A woman who is, as it says here, delicately, a harlot, maybe not so delicately, and maybe that's a great place for a man to hide. Right? Lots of traffic, lots of business, no one's going to notice, and therefore they go and they approach this house, and this is where they stay. Although on a moral level, again, as a spy, maybe this is a great way to go unnoticed, but on a moral level, we are at that point a little bit perturbed as for their choice of lodging. What we're not told in the text is who these people are. We're not told anything more about this woman. Although, as things go on within Sefer Yehoshua, she seems to be incredibly with it. She seems to understand. I say what I mean with it. I don't mean in terms of her buying French fashion. I mean in terms of her spiritual sensitivity. And she seems to know exactly which side is right and which side is wrong, which therefore makes her a very interesting zonah. There's one other element to this verse that we're going to spend some time on. It says, "Vayishlach Yeshua ben Nun min hashitim," that for some reason the Navi finds it important and significant to tell us which particular locale they were located in when the mission was sent. It was sent from a place called Shittim, and that we will return to soon. Now, even though the word Miraglim is never found in the whole episode of the quote-unquote spies in Parshat Shelach, the word Miraglim is found in another place in the Chumash, and that is in the story of Yosef and the brothers. And if you want to read much more about this, apparently I wrote something about this week. And I'm just going to point out one element over here. In source number 2, Vayizkor Yosef et ha-chalamot asher chalam lahem, vayomer lahem raglim, atem lirot et ervat ha-aretz batem. So over here, we have miraglim, and we also have this thing called ervat ha-aretz. So what does the phrase or the word erva mean in this particular context? Ervat ha-aretz can mean, as far as I can tell, one of two things. It can either mean the weak underbelly of the country, ervat ha-aretz, where the land is naked, where the land is susceptible, or ervat ha-aretz could mean that you came to the red light district, you came to the seedy part of town. In the context of Yosef and the brothers, I would prefer the second interpretation. The weak part of the land, the nakedness of the land. You're going to see where the land has, you know, is naked, where it's vulnerable. So therefore, Ervat Ha'aretz would be analogous, or would be synonymous with vulnerability. You'll find where the land is naked, where it's weak, where it could be penetrated. That there's spies to try to see how you can capture the land. The other part is that he's suggesting is that you can, or the other way of looking at it, that he was suggesting that they came to look at the red light district. Now, if that's the case, it does make these two situations a lot closer in terms of their understanding of being Meraglim and Ervat Ha'aretz, Meraglim and the Zonah. The difference, of course, is that one is entering into Eretz Canaan at this point, and the other is entering into Eretz Mitzrayim, which maybe is very different, and then again maybe is not, and that will hopefully come back to. What's also interesting is Yosef over here is on the outside of the Meraglim, and over here Yehoshua is on the outside, and of course Yehoshua does come from the tribe of Yosef, which may be somewhat significant or not. With Yosef, one of the interpretations, which I'll suggest, which I'm not saying is the only interpretation or even the one which I think is right, but I think is possible, Yosef's whole accusing them over here of being Meraglim is very, very strange. He says, you're Meraglim, you went to the red light district, and so on. So why does Yosef do this? So one reason may be is because it always is incredibly troublesome to me that the brothers never figure out that that's Yosef. And the story of Yosef, the Canaanite, the Ivri, who came from Canaan, who came to Egypt, who ended up in prison, and came out of the prison and becomes the second in command, that should be a very well-known story. How could it be that they never figure out that this is Yosef? Meaning, had they just heard all of the external pieces, they should have been able to figure out that it's Yosef. So I think that the first thing that Yosef does, what do they say is the best defense is a good offense. So what does he do? He accuses them of being spies. Once he accuses them of being spies, what can they not do? They can't go around looking and asking for information, because once they start asking for information, then they'll say, see, you were spies. So therefore, he accuses them of being spies in order to protect his identity. Do you like that? I like it, but I think there's a better interpretation. But I think it works very well in terms of the Yosef story, because otherwise the whole dialogue is really very difficult. You're spies, you're not spies, you are spies, we're not spies, you are spies, I think you're spies, we're not spies. And you say, what in the world does he want from them? So as I said, unless he's trying to defend himself, it's a little difficult. Although, as I said, there are other interpretations. Now, the Medrash in source number 3 provides us with identity of the two spies. And of course, the Medrash, as Medrash does so very often, it works with what we call the theory of conservation of characters. Why introduce new people that you never heard of when you can just say it's old people that we're quite familiar with? Tells us that the two spies are well-known characters. What's interesting is this Midrash starts with halacha, which some people seem to disdain. And the halacha... Why are you getting defensive? It starts with a halacha. There's a whole type of medrash that begins with something called, it's called Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu. Rabbi, teach us. And it's called a medrash. It's a whole theme. Over here, this medrash is found, this one in Bamid Rabbah, in the Tanchuma, it's found as a Yilamdeinu Rabbeinu. What's the halacha? Mahu lefrosh liyam hagadol kodim l'shabbat shlosha yamim. Are you allowed to go on a cruise within 3 days of Shabbat, or must you get on the boat 3 days before Shabbat? So over here, the halacha ends up telling us or deciding that if you are on a mission from God, you're a shliach mitzvah, then you're permitted to go within 3 days. Otherwise, if this is an optional tour, then you should only get on the boat more than 3 days before Shabbat. And within this whole discussion, then, it leads into these people going on this mission, which it considers to be shluchei mitzvah. And it says, from where it's underlined, maybe three, four words before then, Ka'otam shnayim sheshalach Yeshua ben Nun, sheneamar v'yishlach Yeshua ben Nun min hashitim shnayim, mi hayu, who were they? Shanu rabotenu elu Pinchas v'kalev. The two were sent were Pinchas and Kalev. Kalev is particularly appropriate. Why? Because not only did he go on the first one, he did good. Let me translate it to English. He successfully completed his mission while all the others failed. So therefore, when Yehoshua has to send somebody in the mind of the Midrash, who does he choose to send? So obviously, you're going to send the one who had the gumption, the one who was brave, the one who fought against all the others, and the ones who had, and the one who did not have a jaundiced eye, and that person is Kalev ben Yefuna. By the way, from which Shevet is Kalev? So Kalev is from the tribe of Yehuda. The other one is going to be perhaps the more difficult one, because he was not at all involved in the first mission. And who is that? That's Pinchas. Now, Pinchas, on the other hand, is a known character. He's somebody who we're familiar with. Which tribe is Pinchas from? Levi. Who was the one who was sent from Shevet Levi in Parshat Shelach? Very good. There was no one sent from Levi in Parshat Shlach. So again, here you have somebody who doesn't fail. Okay, so far you have Yeshua who doesn't fail, sent Pinchas, whose whole tribe doesn't fail in this area. He doesn't send from all the other tribes that failed, and he sends Kalev, who was successful. Okay, just in order to make this... Yes, Jane? Correct. Correct. And that is, I would think, is incredibly important in this particular area, because Pinchas is the one who sort of cleans up when we have this little problem with Zimri and Cozbi. By the way, where did that problem take place? You guessed just now. Yes. This isn't Jeopardy.
But it's correct.
That took place in Shittim. Which once you realize that, again, that whole thing is from Shittim, Yehoshua sends them. And Shittim is the place where 24,000 Jews died as a result of the plague, which resulted from the outrage that took place in terms of Baal Peor, which is represented by the sin of Zimri. The hero of that entire episode is Pinchas. So therefore, presumably, what the Midrash is doing over here, it's saying, okay, it's being sent from Shittim. Who's the one who's successful by Shittim? That's Pinchas. Who is the one who's successful in the previous time? Is Kalev. Let's put Kalev and Pinchas together, and now we have our spies. And of course, at this point, they're both coming as representatives of Yosef, or I'll restate that, of Yehoshua, who comes from Yosef. And Yosef also apparently had some success in terms of withstanding temptation. But it's very interesting that the place that they go, of all places, is the home of Rachav, the Zonah. Just to realize how dangerous this place would be, the Gemara, perhaps in somewhat of an exaggeration, tells us of the incredible, I guess for lack of a better term, we would say sex appeal of Rachav, tells us in source number 4, Tanu Rabbanan. Arba'an nashim yefefiyot hayu ba'olam. And I hope no one takes offense over here, but this is only up to that point. Okay? It says that there were 4 beautiful women in the world, Sarav, Avigail, Rachav, or perhaps it's Rachav, Avigail, ve'Esther. Ulamanda oma Esther yirak roket haita, and anyone who says that Esther had a green complexion, mefik Esther umayayel Vashti. So you can replace Esther with Vashti. Tanu Rabbanan, Rachav bishma zinta. You just have to say her name, and that causes lust. Ya'el bekola, her voice, Avigail bezichra, Michal bat Shaul b'riyata. I mean, it's a kol omer Rachav Rachav miyad nikri. Anybody who even says the name Rachav Rachav will be moved by this. Amalei Rav Nachman, ana amina Rachav Rachav lo ichpatli. I can say it. Look, I can say it again and again. Nothing happens. So the Gemara says, Amalei kikamina b'yoda umakira. We meant anybody who ever met her and just has to say her name, and that's enough to send men wild. So perhaps we should make a new perfume and call it Rachav Rachav. Okay, maybe not. Abroad? I don't know, but if you want to write this, then there may be other reasons. I don't know. Rachav. By the way, in the Medrash that I mentioned earlier, there is one other element that the Medrash goes into when it talks about Pinchas. The Medrash doesn't so much go backwards into what Pinchas did in terms of Zimri. The Medrash talks about Pinchas' capability of being angelic. Just a few. There's a funny twist of language there. Take a look by the second part of the Medrash where I have it underlined. It says, the king was looking for them, ma'asta rachav natla utam lahat minam. She took them to hide them. Amr la Pinchas, ani kohen, I'm a kohen, which is obviously post-Zimri. Va'kohanim nimshulu l'malachim. And kohanim are like angels. Why? Because it says in Malachi, ki sifte kohen yishmeru dat, v'tara yivakshu mipihu, ki malach Hashem tzavakotu. Over here, the word malach most likely means a messenger of God. A Kohen is a messenger of God. Malach Hashem Tzavakot. He goes, Vahav Malach Mevakesh Nireh, Mevakesh Einu Nireh. Just in case you've never seen this before, or in case you've missed Ghostbusters, it says over here that angels have the ability to be seen or not to be seen. So over here, Pinchas says, I can make myself, the Israeli version of this would be Danny Dean. I can make myself appear, I can make myself disappear. And then where it's underlined again towards the bottom, Lafichach Amar La Pinchas Ani Kohen Ve'eini Tzorich Lahatmin Hitmin Lo Kalev Chaviri. He goes, don't bother hiding me. I can make myself disappear. Go hide Kalev. V'ani Omed Lefnehin Ve'einan Ro'inoti. And I will stand there. You won't see me. V'chein Asta Shenema V'dikacha Isha Tshnei Anashim V'titzpenem En Kativ Kan Elo V'titzpenu Harei Shelo Hitminu La Pinchas Elo La Kalev. This whole midrash over there was going back to that first point to explain why this was these were shluchei mitzvah and the others were rishaim and these were tzadikim. But it's very interesting that it just goes into Pinchas in terms of his ability to disappear and Pinchas being an angel and he can appear and he cannot appear. Do you realize what they're doing to Pinchas? You don't realize what they did to Pinchas. Correct. They just turned him into Eliyahu. Pinchas over here is in the role of Eliyahu. So can we try this again then?
The only source?
No, many.
Isn't there
maybe an
oversight. Is that the source that Eliyahu is the Gimbul of Pinchas?
No, there are sources that say this. The question is, the early sources that say it, the question is, does it mean that they have similar personalities, character traits, or does it mean in terms of, you know, what you would call reincarnation, like you see in the movies? Over here, you have a midrash, which is very clearly taking Pinchas and turning him into Eliyahu-like. Once you realize all the other sources that do make that identification, this one becomes a lot easier. But again, I want to try to approach this as much as we can thematically. We therefore have Kalev, who comes from which tribe? Let's try this again. From, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, do it. Correct. And what is the significance of these tribes in terms of eschatology? Forget that. In terms of the Achrit Hayamim, in terms of the final redemption, and Eliyahu and Avi. So over here you have Eliyahu and Avi accompanying the person who's actually the forerunner of Mashiach ben David, from Malchut David, from Yehuda. You have Mashiach ben Yosef, Yehoshua, who's involved in this, and therefore these three become all the more interesting in terms of entering into Eretz Yisrael. But again, what to us is, I think, should be somewhat intriguing. Okay, so you couldn't find a nicer place to stay? You had to go to a hotel that charges by the hour? You couldn't find a place that charges for the whole night? Meaning, the choice over here, again, if you want to tell me that this was part of their plan of going undercover, is you go to a place with a revolving door that no one's going to notice people coming or going, so then perhaps you can say maybe even that's pshat. Okay. But all of that, everything I just now said in terms of that being the pshat, the one thing that does perturb us a little bit about this is still this idea that they were sent from Shittim, which really seems to be unnecessary to state. You could have just said that Yeshua was sent them. If Yeshua was sent them, what would you all have understood? He sent them from the other side of the Jordan. Okay, do I need to know exactly Shittim? And it's that identification with Shittim which becomes a little bit more intriguing. Correct? I mean some of them. But it's interesting that Moshe gives Yehoshua a name. He takes Hoshea and he turns it to Yehoshua. At that point, he gives him a Yud Hei Vav in his name. And the only other person, if you look at all the names of the people, the fathers of the tribes, the only other Yud Hei Vav in all of that is Kalev ben Yefuna from the tribe of Yehuda. So over here, you seem to have over here this God identity within them, and all the other ones you have other things, including Aleph Lamed, but that seems to be part of the unsuccessful. We had a whole class, remember that? We analyzed all the names? Mm-hmm. I think we got stuck on Vavsi, right? Okay. Eliyahu, good. The Gemara doesn't know what tribe Eliyahu is from. But if I take the Eliyahu is Pinchas analogy, over here I have the opposite. I have Pinchas acting very much like Eliyahu. There is so much confusion on this point. Even in the Gemara, there is a debate which tribe he's from, and you know how it gets resolved? Eliyahu shows up and says, "Why? What are you debating?" Eliyahu shows up in the Beis Medrash that day and says, "What are you doing? Why are you arguing? I am from Bnei Banim, from Rachel." So, but on the other hand, there are all these Midrashim that assume that Eliyahu is a Kohen, which, by the way, is not a contradiction. I mean, mothers also have genealogy. And that's the reason why they put a cemetery right in front of that particular shire, because they thought that Eliyahu therefore wouldn't be able to come in. Fine, leave that. Just in case you didn't trust me till now, source number 6: Vayeshev Yisrael bashitim vayachel ha'am leznot et beno Moav. Source number 6 identifies Shittim as the place that the outrage actually took place, in terms of the Moabite cheerleaders. So, yes, is this about halacha?
Why is the core sin, the thing that undermines everything, always sexual immorality?
Unless it's avodah zarah.
Which gives permission for sexual immorality.
But I'm saying it's.
And this was the biggest.
I think if you go through all of Navi, I think avodah zarah would win out over sexuality. It just could be that the Avodah Zarah doesn't resonate with us all that much, so we just pay attention with the other one. Correct. But still, I'm saying if you go through all of Tanakh, I think the sin that Am Yisrael is accused of more than anything else would be Avodah Zarah. You also have lots of things in terms of injustice and so on. But it's a fair comment. It could be that this is one of the sins that people are guilty of occasionally. So therefore it's here, and therefore we notice it. I mean, the Tanakh is a very real book. I mean, what sin would you like to replace this with? Taking envelopes of money? Let's continue. Now, here is a very famous midrash that you've heard of, or at least some part of it, but what you may never have noticed is the starting point of the midrash, the opening line. Vayashev Yisrael Bashitim. Now you recognize that line. You will not forget it, at least for a day. Vayashev Yisrael Bashitim. Halacha halacha, the halacha teaches us, b'schut kamad devarim nigalu Yisrael mimitzrayim. Do you remember that? Because of certain behaviors, the Jews got out of Egypt. Shonu rabotenu b'schut arba devarim nigalu Yisrael mimitzrayim, shaloshinu shimotam, shaloshinu lashonam, v'lo gilu misterin shalem. They didn't reveal their secrets. Skip a little bit. V'lo nifritzu ba'arayot, shekein kativ, gan na'ul achoti kala, elu ha'zacharim gan na'ul, ma'ayan chatum elu ha'betulot. That both the males and the females, despite the fact that in many slave societies there is sexual morality, especially by the slave class, in order to try to utilize their sexuality to raise themselves one way or another economically, getting food or other ways. Over here it says that in Mitzrayim that did not take place. Again, where it's underlined, v'yachala amluznot yesh, and then it says, but over here we find in Shittim. You know what? Let's go back a line before that. Let's go from where it's underlined before. Tidalach asherei achat heta upir samakatu v'yetzei ben isha yisraelit v'kol otan rabim shana lo serchu b'midbar ad shebo l'shittim. And the entire 40 years, the Jews had kept sexually chaste until they got to this particular place. Which was it? Shittim. L'chein katuv v'yashav Yisrael b'shittim v'ychal am liznot shittim sh'asu shtut. So it understands it understands the word shittim from shtut. From. Right. Right. V'ychal am liznot yesh ma'ayanot Shemigadlin Giborim. There are streams that raise strong people, v'yesh chalashim, and those weak. V'yesh na'in, v'yesh mechorin. There are streams with very nice, pleasant water, and there are streams with disgusting water. V'yesh snu'in, v'yesh shitufim b'zima. There are streams that cause people to be modest, and those that cause them to be immoral. Uma'ayan shittim shelznut haya. The stream of shittim was one which the waters were full of znut. V'hu mashke l'stone. And this was the source for stone. Atamotze sha'amru ayeh anashim ashebo elecha hotzi'im elenu v'noda. Ulafish and it kalel otoma ayan, atira kadosh baruch hu liyabsho shenemar umayan mi beit Hashem yotzav ashkat nachal ashitim mimot Avraham lo nifretz achad biznut kevon shibor l'shitim v'shotu mimav nifretzu biznut. So let me go back a little bit. As far as the midrash is concerned, and I skipped a little bit, and there are parallel midrashim that discuss this. They say that when Avraham and Sarah went down to Egypt, and when Paro put his hand towards Sarah, what happened? A malach came and smacked him upside the head with a 2x4, and Paro got a headache and decided he wasn't in the mood. The Midrash says because of this, all the Jewish women in Egypt were saved because of the Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, that Sarah was saved at that point. the acts of the fathers are a sign for children. The Midrash then goes on to say, because Yosef was able to withstand the temptation of Eshet Potiphar, that created the spiritual power of future generations of men in Egypt to be able to withstand that type of temptation. He says, all this is good and well until they get to Shittim. By Shittim, something goes wrong. So over here, the Midrash is telling us, yes, Shittim is a very bad place. A matter of fact, it tells us, let's just see it again. It says that Shittim, there is a stream for who mashkel a stone, which means Shittim is the source of stone being stone. That doesn't sound so good. By the way, where is Shittim? Where is stone? If you had a map. You have a map. What? According to what I saw when I looked this up yesterday, again, the map could have changed, but we're guessing a little bit because we don't have exact directions or where stone is, and also presumably the whole area changed in terms of the topography. That's what happens when God gets very upset with you and causes mass destruction. So according to the map which I saw, okay, you know where Jericho is. Jericho is north of the Dead Sea on the western side of the Jordan, right? Shittim is right on the other side, almost parallel to where Jericho is, a little north of the Dead Sea on the eastern side of the Jordan. And stone is right underneath it. So being that streams flow downstream, it would make then perfect sense that the source of stone, and stone, by the way, according to this map, was also on the eastern side of the Jordan, or on the eastern side of the Dead Sea, towards the south of it. Yes? Is that what your map bears out? It's gone. It's gone already. that Right. They're right next to one another. Oh. So part of the question is when they ran away, which direction do they run to? So very clearly in the atlas of the Dot Mikra, it very clearly had Stone and Amora on. That's what I wanted to, because I didn't realize that before either until I looked it up, which is why it's good every now and then to look things up, that Stone and Amora were on the east side of, on the Jordanian side of the Yam HaMelech, what today would be Jordan. Stone and Amora are in Jordan. So again, part of the problem is, look, you know the Yam HaMelech is changing even yeah. Now. What exactly did God do? And on top of everything else, you also know that there's a wonderful fault which is running north-south over there. But anyway, over here, this is telling us that the source of stone is Shittim. Now again, you can look at that in terms of that's literally where they got their water flowing, being that the Dead Sea is not the best water. But again, is that before or after? You still can't find stone. You shred a book in search of stone. Now, the Midrash quoted something. He quoted a pasuk in Sefer Yoel. But before I get that, let's read into Rabbeinu Bachaye in source number 9, because he explains the Midrash a drop more. Again, he goes into this thing with Mayan Shel Shittim Shel Znutaya V'yamashkel Estom U'lefi Shenit Kalel Oto Ma'ayan Atim Kadosh Baruch Hu Liyavsho U'lechadsho. So therefore, so it says, in the future, God will dry this out and then it will get recreated in a proper way. So I guess maybe it's not so bad if the whole Dead Sea area is drying out. This is part of a long-term ecological project. Shekein hitnabe Yoel, and now let's take a look at what Yoel says. We'll read the English. Multitudes, multitudes in the Valley of Decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the Valley of Decision. The sun and the moon are darkened. By the way, it's also interesting in terms of sun and moon.
Where are you reading?
I'm reading in source 10, I hope. Hamonim, hamonim, be'emek ha'charutz, kikirov, yom Hashem be'emek ha'charutz, shemesh v'yareach kadaru, v'kochavim asfu nigham. Just in terms of the moon, there may be some kind of a connection between Yericho and Yareach. Perhaps that's what they worship there, and which would make Beit Shemesh, of course, the house of the rising sun. It's not New Orleans, but that's what Beit Shemesh means. So it could be that they worship the sun in Beit Shemesh, and they were, because that's where you're still a little bit up and you see the whole sun coming up. But on the other, Yericho is where they would have worshipped the moon. And over here it says, the sun and the moon are darkened and the stars withdraw their shining. And the Lord roars out of Zion and utters his voice in Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shake. This does not sound good. So you have at the end of Sefer Yoel, you have some kind of earthquake. But the Lord will be your refuge for his people and a fortress for the people of Israel. And you shall know that I'm the Lord your God, dwelling in Zion by a holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and no stranger shall pass through her anymore. And it shall come to pass, this is what they were talking about on that day, that the mountains shall drop sweet wine, and the hills shall flow with milk, and all the streams of Judah shall flow with waters, and a fountain shall issue from the house of the Lord, and shall water the valley of Shittim. This is why, I don't know if you ever heard of these mystical traditions based on this, that a stream will come out on the Temple Mount, which there have been various rumors about such things over the last couple of years, about some kind of a stream coming out, because this is part of this prophet, this, you ready again? This eschatological prophecy that there will come water flowing. And again, Jerusalem's problem had always historically been one of water. So if now the house of God, Har Tzion, Yerushalayim, the Beit HaMikdash, this now will become a place where the water will flow from, and this water will be cleansing water, and this water, again, very specifically, of all places that it has to go to clean, what does it say over here? It shall flow to the valley of Shittim. That was Pasuk Yud Chet, or I have it underlined. Umayan mi Beit Hashem yetzei v'hishka et nachal ha-shittim. Just in case you're worried, Mitzrayim l'shamema tihyeh, Egypt will become desolate, the Edom l'midbar shmama, and Edom will be desolate, tihyeh, Machmas b'nei Yudah she'shafchu dam naki ba'artzam, because of the violence or the innocent blood which they have spilled. V'Yehuda la'olam teshev, Yerushalayim l'dor v'dor, v'niketi damam lo niketi, Hashem Shochein B'Tzion, which is a verse which I think that you recognize, which is included within the Avarachamim. But it's interesting that within this whole vision of the end of days, how God will take vengeance on those who sinned, we also have Shittim somehow being healed. So, and by the way, I do want to point out one more thing. If you do a search of the word Shittim in the Chumash, will you find it more than any other place? Within the building of the Mishkan. Building of the Mishkan, you have Shittim time and time again, which the Midrashim do connect with this Shittim. Yes, yes. It says that in Shittim you have outrage, in Shittim you have the healing. That the healing and the outrage should have the same concept, which is also interesting then, that from the Makom HaMikdash, from the Beit HaMikdash, you now go back to Shittim and things get healed. It's not clear, but you will therefore have all kinds of sources that do go about and connect it. By the way, I cut out most of those sources. Source 13, I thought you'd like Avala Shittim, Hitablusha Meitosim Ba'arba Elif Ba'avon Hashittim, 24 1,000 people died there. And then the Siftei Kohen tells us, Hashitim Gematria is Hasatan. So those of you who like Gematrias, the Satan, Hasatan. By the way, Bnei Brak is also in Gematria Hasatan. It is. You could do with that whatever you want. Excuse me? I'm just... Over here, the Orach Chaim in source 14 says, "Vayeshev Yisrael b'shitim tzarech ladat mat tzarech bodat mamar zeh." V'rabotenu zal he'iru b'zeh v'amru ki l'diacha ba ki zeh sipat l'znut. It was shitim which caused the znut. The fish ha'makom mitiv'o l'orer teva hatava ha'behemit. That this place shitim somehow brought up animalistic natural urges or instinctual urges. That they somehow had gone out of the machaneh. The machaneh was the machaneh with the mishkan inside. Once they were no longer within the power of the machaneh, that's where they became susceptible. So let's see what we can do with the last 8 minutes of the year. Look at source 15. The Degel Machaneh Ephraim writes, "Zeish lo masher meza pasuk v'yokat Yosef haynu atzadik melaked et kol hakesef lashon ta'ava." When Yosef collects all the money, he says money also can be ta'ava. Haynu hatavot znut chas v'shalom shahu Mitzrayim shahu shorish l'kol haznut ki Mitzrayim nekra ervat ha'aretz. Going back to when Yosef talks Meraglim ervat ha'aretz, and there are other places as well. V'gam eretz kanan hu shorish l'kol hatavot ra'ot v'zerot b'chinat ha'chesed v'royach ha'shayit yitbarach hizhir al arayot amar k'ma'asei eretz Mitzrayim v'eretz kanan v'zel mistama yadua ha'kol yodea ha'kol Ubarei hakol galui v'yadua lefanav shesham baratzota elu hu shorish kol ha'tavot zarot rachmana litzlan v'sham hi mergoa lilit rachmana litzlan lililit rachmana litzlan. So what the Degel Machaneh Ephraim is saying is that these two places, Egypt and Canaan, this is the source of all kinds of negative vibes, negative power, but specifically within ta'ava. Ta'ava would be desire. What he's referring to is source 16 in Vayikra, where it says, "Kama'aseh eretz Mitzrayim asher yashavtem b'lo ta'asu," don't follow the practices of Egypt. "U'kama'aseh eretz Kanaan asher ani mevi etchem shama lo ta'asu u'b'chukoteim le'ot t'lechu." That verse is written within the context of all of the prohibited relationships, and it says in a general way, aside from all the specific things, it says, don't follow the practices of Egypt, where you're leaving, and Canaan, where you're going to, because these, so what the Degel Machaneh Ephraim is telling us, is that these are places where all kinds of negativity take place. Now the question, of course, is why? So in order to understand that, we need to go back a little bit. Source 17. Uvnei Cham, who was Cham? He was the son of Noach, who did some kind of outrage to Noach. Uvnei Cham, Cush u'Mitzrayim u'Fut u'Kanan. Which means this is all coming from one source, and that source is Cham, and Cham is very hot-blooded, which is why he's called Cham. Rav Hirsch has very interesting things on in this. Vikushilat at Nimrod, it does not sound like a good character. Huacheliot Gibor Ba'aretz, I'm skipping a little bit. Also, the Plishtim come from this. Vihigvula Knani Bitsidon Bochal Gerara, Ad Aza, Bochas Doma, Va'amora, Va'admav Tzavim, Ad Lashan. Which means these are the people that go down and take Eretz Yisrael and take Knan. Elu b'necham, l'mishpachotam, l'shonab, artatam, v'goyem. Which means this whole area, the people that have this area, going from Egypt, going up through Sodom and Amorah, going through Derech Eretz Plishtim, which is the other way, all of this is being controlled by Bnei Cham. So the question is, really, how do you go and somehow defeat Bnei Cham? And by the way, there is a verse in source 18, which is also dealing with this exact issue. Vayehi riv bein ro'e mikne Avram, ubein ro'e mikne Lot, v'aknani v'abrisi az yoshev ba'aretz. Which always sounds very strange in an essay. What do you have to tell me about the Kenani? No, that's part of the problem, is the Kenani. And then when Avram says to Lot, let's divide and go in different directions, what does Lot do? Pasuk Yud, v'yisa Lot et eina v'yar et kol kikar hayardein, ki kula mashke lefnei shachet Hashem etzdom v'etamora, ki gan Hashem. You ever noticed this before? Ke'eretz Mitzrayim. Which means this whole area is somehow like Mitzrayim. And what's Mitzrayim like? Mitzrayim is this place which we just now learned is this source of all of the Tum'ah, which means Sodom and Amorah is a place which also may be like Egypt where the Nile overflows. Over here, you can also have by Sodom and Amorah the water overflowing. Where's the water overflowing from? From Nachal Shittim, which means Shittim is overflowing in Sodom, the Nile overflows into Egypt, and that creates some kind of a corrupt moral attitude. Source 20, from Rav Tzaduk, V'atchalat birurin d'Yisrael, what Israel needs to do is to make birur. Birur means to analyze, divide between good and bad, that levarer. Right? What you can't do in Shabbat Borer, that we need to do Borer. We need to divide between good and bad. The Hatchalata Birin Yisrael Hu B'Ta'avot Shebizehu Hatchalata Hasata B'Zer Yisrael V'Kengalu L'Mitzrayim Ervata Aretz Makom Tokef Azima K'Maseh Eretz Mitzrayim. That's why the Jews of all places, where do they need to go? They needed to go to Egypt and to emerge from Egypt with a moral conscience. Which is Egypt, which is this totally immoral place, the Jews had to go down into Egypt and be able to emerge from Egypt. And so on. Right. The Hoya Ayide Yosef Shagadar Mina Erva, which I've quoted you before, the Zenidru Kol Yisrael Acharav. Ki be'emet Kol Yisrael Kuma Achat V'Goy Achad Ula Atid Kishi Borer Nikiot Yisrael Migioti Ayide Mashiach Ben David Yechye Gam Mashiach Ben Yosef Dere Gam Hu Michlal Akoma V'chein B'Mitzrayim Kishe Nigader Hu. So what he's telling you over here is that what has happened in the past needs to then go on into the future. Part of the core of all this is this idea of Mashiach ben Yosef. Mashiach ben Yosef, the prototype, again I have to tell you, is Yehoshua. Yehoshua merges together with Kalev, and that becomes this incredible combination, and now you realize why it's so appropriate that Pinchas / Eliyahu is over there on the side, because this ability to go in to do this type of a birur, this is what's necessary. One or two more interesting points. If you already talked about Pinchas being Eliyahu and so on and so forth, there's a wonderful book, which I've had for years and years, but they finally put it on my computer disk program, so I'm able to, without cutting and pasting, bringing it for you. It's called the Kehilot Yaakov. Kehilot Yaakov is an encyclopedia of Kabbalistic terms and ideas. So, and it goes in alphabetical order. Over here, under Yud Hey, it has Yehoshua. Yeshua bin Nun is a Gilgul Yosef et Tzadik. So that's something which you should now understand, whether, again, this is a Kabbalistic source which is talking in terms of reincarnation, but it also means in terms of characteristics, in terms of role in life. Shelo lakach eshet Adonav, lakach ata et rachav gilgula. So according to this, he tells us that Yehoshua goes and marries Rachav afterwards. Which means at the time where Yosef meets Eshes Potiphar, at that point they cannot possibly come together because it's not right. What's the matter? And you have Yirmiyahu, you have all kinds of kings, all kinds of Nevi'im, which then emerge from this merger. Which means over here, again, let's just go back to Rachav. Without doing anything midrashic, without doing anything Kabbalistic, Rachav is a very impressive woman. She's able to assess the situation, to get outside of her cultural biases, to understand right away that the Jews have God with them. They therefore will be successful. She has knowledge within, again, the Navi tells us, knowledge of Kriyat Yamsuf. She knows that God is with these people, and she says, I will help you, but I want to join you. Which, by the way, is very different from what Eshet Potiphar does. What does Eshet Potiphar do? So again, here's the irony. Eshet Potiphar is this woman of high standing, and what does she see? She sees this young, attractive boy, so therefore there is lust. Over here, it's not. You have this woman who is called a zonah, and what do you have at the end? You have great theological understanding, and you have a transformation taking place over here of somebody who's connected to God. This, therefore, becomes a metaphor of the entire place of Canaan, of Mitzrayim, of Sodom and Amorah, getting turned around. And that's what the Navi really points at in Yoel, which means that this idea of recognition of God, which is what the Navi speaks of, will then go and be able to flow to Shittim, and Shittim is this place that impacts upon Sodom, and that's where all of this negativity comes from. But why does it all come from here? Because this is the place that all the B'nai Cham live, and the B'nai Cham have a certain type of moral approach. Look through all of Sefer Bereshit, and you will find that every single man who does not behave properly, the exception perhaps of Yehuda, is a descendant of Cham. Going from Paro, going through Avimelech, and so on. All of this comes from Cham, from this hot-blooded, taking without asking type of approach, immoral, violent, and so on. This is what comes from Cham. Again, I said everyone in Bereshit, I'm saying post-flood. It could be that that's the remnant still of what's before the flood. That Cham is the remnant of what was destroyed before the flood. We discussed that 4 years ago. If we realize then that this is what's in Israel at the time, there is a need to somehow go in and try to flip it around. Turn it around, turn it from something which is inappropriate to become somehow holiness. So who are the people involved in the mission? So we already saw this. It's Kalev, and it's Pinchas. Pinchas, who had this ability of fighting against Zimri, and therefore we're confident there. Kalev is the one who's able to have wonderful moral bearing and not be influenced by the majority. But both of them in this particular mission are shlichim of Yehoshua, who is the prototype of Mashiach ben Yosef. But what we're seeing here, that this there all becomes the formula in terms of the future as well. That you need this combination of Mashiach ben Yosef, you need this combination of Mashiach ben David, and you have Eliyahu, who can appear, disappear, do whatever is necessary. But over here, let's say in terms of ultimate poetic justice, you have the Zonah from Yericho end up turning into the wife of Yehoshua, because in this case she has accepted God, she has accepted the divine plan, she realizes that the Jew is going to come in, she realizes that God is with them, so that becomes part of the prototype for the future as well. And that's captured by this metaphor which the Navi tells us, is that the water will now flow from Yerushalayim, the water will now flow from the Har HaBayit, and that water will go and wash out specifically of all places of Shittim. And once that happens, then all the negativity which exists and all the ta'ava, which is the language which is used certainly by the Hasidic sources, all of that will then be dealt with, and then this will turn around. The Gra, which I didn't bother you with, has a much, much longer, going down from the very beginning of creation, analysis of this tension going all the way through the end of creation, but it was 3 pages and most of it was Aramaic. So we cut that off from you. But then it's interesting, because this mission of Yehoshua becomes much more than the mission that Moshe sent in terms of the actual Torah reading of Shlach. This mission of Yeshua becomes, therefore, the prototype of the future entering into Eretz Israel and the transformation that will need to take place in order to take all of the superficial immediate gratification type of a society and turning it into something which recognizes that the hand of God is with us and that we are working and that God is actually with us, but just to allow that light to actually shine. Shabbat Shalom.